the future. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey everybody, welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Live. Yes, it is our call-in show from Monday, October 19th, 2020. On Out the Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards and across the country. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But you can get both by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. But you can only join the conversation live through the Podbean app on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show live on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now. Just click on the little gift icon at the bottom of your screen. Drop in a gift into our virtual tip jar. You fill your digital pockets with Podbean's golden beans. That's what they call them. I can't help it, right? It's not my choice. What can I say? Golden beans. You got it. Send us a cup of coffee, a love balloon, roses, even a golden mic. Those are all those little kind of icons you can click on. And every gift that you send helps support and expand this podcast. If you're looking for more PA-based progressive talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 5 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, or Facebook, or subscribe to his daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And a special shout out, as always, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page or follow him on Twitter at @songadayman. That's @songadayman with two N's at that man. So on today's show, I welcome Rick Kajewski to the show. Rick is a candidate for state representative in the 188th State House District in West Philly. Rick has worked as a criminal justice reform and access to public education. Since 2016, Rick has been an organizer with Reclaim Philadelphia, fighting to put working class people at the forefront. In the 2017 general election, Rick led a team of 200 volunteers in our neighborhoods to elect Larry Krasner, the most progressive district attorney in the country. I think that goes without question still. Rick is running on a platform of dignified education for all, decarceration, affordable housing for all, health care for all, ending the war on drugs, defending workers' rights and the right to organize, and a Green New Deal for PA. And Rick won the Democratic primary this past summer by a margin of nearly 20 points, defeating Representative James Roebuck Jr., one of the longest-serving members of the PA State House and ranking Democrat on the House Education Committee. It's no wonder that Rick earned an early endorsement from Bernie Sanders. Rick faces no Republican challenger in the general election, so he is all but assured to join the growing ranks of progressive state legislators, including Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato, Elizabeth Fiedler, and PA's own version of the squad elected in 2018. I should include Malcolm Kenyatta in that one, too, as well, because he's been doing amazing, amazing work. So, with that, Rick, I appreciate you taking the time. This is busy season right now, but welcome to the show.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Kevin. I really, really flattering, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I tell you, it's like, you know, we've been reaching out to a bunch of political candidates, particularly on the left. I mean, one of the things that we do with Raging Chicken, the whole idea of having, say, progressive media from the get-go, is that you have kind of a stream and a voice where you can connect up with, say, you know, progressive both in and outside of the legislature, and as a way of kind of giving voice and building out that community over time. And one of the things I wanted to really kind of welcome you to the show in the part because, you know, your hard fought fight was, you know, one, going up against, you know, really a kind of a longstanding Democratic Party machine in Pennsylvania against, you know, Jim Roebuck. I mean, Jim Roebuck, I mean, you know, you did, you know, in your acceptance speech or your kind of your, you know, victory speech, you know, you really kind of, I think, hit, you know, the nail right on the head, you know, and basically thanking him for his service and the work that he's done. Because, you know, Jim Roebuck was not just kind of like, you know, a guy who was, you know, like checked out completely, right? I mean, you know, he did some good work in there, but it was clear that, you know, the fight for our future had to begin with a change in the way that we organize in the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so talk a little bit about that kind of choice. So, you know, see, you had the big fight now. You're not facing a challenger in the fall. So you're going to, you know, look, I mean, barring something horrific happening, you know, everyone knock on every piece of wood that you got, right? That we're going to move you forward and you're going to be joining this kind of growing progressive caucus in Pennsylvania. So talk to us a little bit about kind of what got you to this point. I mean, having, and especially then having to run in the midst of a pandemic. But what got you to the point where you're saying, you know, I'm going to throw my head into this?
Yeah, no, most certainly. It's a long tail, and COVID only made things more and more unprecedented and complicated. But essentially, you know, what brought me to this point of running for office, it's twofold. One is that for myself, you know, so I'm a 29-year-old working class black man who's lived in Philadelphia my whole entire adult life. The 188th district, for context, is in West and Southwest Philadelphia. I've spent my whole adult life in that district. I first came here when I was 18 to attend University of Pennsylvania, and then worked in the surrounding area and lived in the surrounding area after the fact. And, you know, just to give folks some statistics about Philly, Philadelphia is the most impoverished big city in the country. It is one of the most incarcerated big cities in the country. We have a city that I love that has a tough grit mentality, that is a place where good things happen and bad things happen to bad people, just to correct Donald Trump's call out of our city.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the midst of all that, you know, my city is struggling with some deep, deep structural issues. We have a public school system that has been drastically underfunded and sabotaged by austerity cuts dating all the way back to the Corbett administration. You have an environment where we have, you know, gas plants and energy inefficiency and a lot of pollution that has caused our air to be unclean. You have a justice system that continuously targets black and brown bodies, that over-polices, that is perpetuating mass incarceration. And you have a state that has one of the lowest minimum wages in the country. So you throw all that together, and it's a recipe for some really bad inequalities that cuts across our city. And for me as a young person, it became clear and clearer that if I were to want to be able to own a home here, if I were going to want to be able to send my future children to a well-funded public school, that wasn't clear that kind of future was going to be guaranteed. And that's happened under the political establishment that's been in this city and right. in this state for a long time. So it was clear there was time for change. My own political journey has started, has been happening over the past 5 or 6 years. So I grew up, I'm originally from the South Bronx, actually, in New York City, and grew up in a neighborhood that was impacted by neoliberal policy and the war on drugs. It was also a working class black and brown neighborhood that was targeted with policing and tough on crime policies. And I was fortunate enough to be able to receive a scholarship that allowed me to gain some education access and privilege. But I knew that a lot of kids who were just like me, who had my same background, my same identities, weren't given those opportunities.
Right.
So I began to become involved in local teaching initiatives, expanding access to education and particularly STEM topics. Volunteer taught at a public school in West Philly. From there, was further politicized by the nightmare that was the 2016 election, but also being inspired by Bernie Sanders' first presidential campaign. And through all that, I felt the call to do more. So I became involved with Reclaim Philadelphia in 2016 when it was still in its infancy, became a volunteer leader and then a full-time organizer for the organization. And in my time with Reclaim, we've been able to be a part of some pretty significant victories here in Philly, getting Lane Krasner elected, getting Kendra Brooks elected on the Working Families Party ticket to city council, doing what we can to support progressives like Liz and Elizabeth Fiedler,
yep.
Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato, you know, working to get Tom Wolf back in the governor's mansion. We've built something here that is that has long-term stability and isn't going anywhere. A real progressive movement that is, you know, unified under these issues of healthcare, housing, and, you know, clean environment, is human rights, fully funded public schools, a livable wage, a Green New Deal around environment. And we've been able to build power and actually win things. And so because of that, you know, things look a little bit brighter, a little better in Philadelphia. And well, I think the goal is for us to expand that everywhere, you know?
Well, you know, and I think that Philadelphia in many ways is a real standout for like a path forward for the progressive left, right? And, you know, and I should even put it like this, like, 'cause in some ways, the Democratic Party has drifted right over the years and left a good chunk of folks behind it, particularly kind of working folks, right? And the kind of more progressive, right? Your whole younger generations. What Philadelphia has done, and you know, you've been part of, is really encouraging, as is saying, look, we're not going to make this split between there's electoral politics versus social movements. You actually have, I mean, you, Elizabeth Fiedler, as you mentioned, Summer Lee, Sarah Imerato, Kendra Brooks, are folks that have come out of movements and have stayed connected to those movements, right? In many ways, see those movements as a source of energy and power in organizing, not something that needs to be kind of like kicked to the side in order to kind of, you know, pursue a political future. And like you said, I mean, I think this is a message that's important for everybody to kind of out there, especially, you know, folks who feel disaffected about, say, voting for Joe Biden or something like this on the left, is that just what you said about the Bernie Sanders campaign. It's like, this is the way social movements work, and this is the way change happens, right? It doesn't happen in one – it's not an electoral cycle. It happens in the continuous organizing over time. So in some ways, the work you've been doing in Philadelphia, right, not just of kind of like moving from, okay, I'm getting involved to then getting elected, but staying connected and drawing the energy from those movements, I think is a real mark of what, you know, way Philly is really leading the way in many ways about what's possible. And the fact that it's happening in a context of Philadelphia, right? The freaking, like, the, you know, where the Declaration of Independence was signed, right? Like the founding of the nation. And we see all those things. Like, I remember growing up and hearing about Philadelphia, right? I learned a lot about Philly through ska music, right? That's how I grew up in upstate New York. Okay. I grew up in, like, you know, the Syracuse area, Utica area. And, like, you know that you had kind of like the racial problems as long as Philly's been around, right? There's been, I mean, you have that kind of tension. You had kind of racist police in the city for a long time. You had Frank Rizzo, the statue coming down. That's good.
Yep.
But you mean you had all that stuff that was, yeah, exactly. It's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Right? You say it's coming down. It's coming down. Now it's gone. Here we go. And you know, and you have gatherings, and I think that even the gatherings that have taken place, beginning all the way back to Occupy, around, you know, in Thomas Paine Plaza, recalling a different set of roots. And so, you know, in some ways, the story of Philadelphia, the story of the rising of the American people for the 21st century, in some ways. Now, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to kind of overstate the case, like in some kind of, you know, glorified way. I understand the work that is ahead of everyone. But I mean, you've got to, I mean, what's your perspective on what's coming out of Philadelphia? And as you begin to look about, you know, legislating and moving and getting to Harrisburg and knowing what those battles are going to look like, I mean, how do you see that trajectory kind of moving forward and once you get to the state house?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, I think what you said about Philadelphia is right on the nose. You know, we are a city with a history of racialized violence, racial tension, of structural inequality. But we're also a city that has also a history of organized movements. You know, there's always been an insurgency that has tried to challenge the establishment, whether that was in the 60s and the 80s with a lot of Black community leaders that stepped up and tried to take actual, like, real political power, which is a trend that you see throughout our city from the 70s through the 90s. Whether it is, you know, movements that have been organizing on the streets, you know, the protest RNC, you have, I mean, you also have the tensions around the MOVE organization and the Philadelphia Police Department. So there's always been a place of resistance, of tension, but also of struggle, I think is really the word to describe it. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing is like my generation's time for like principled struggle and our attempt at actually like taking down the establishment and building something new that's going to push our city forward. So I think what you're seeing over the last several years is us as organized movements and as organizers that, it's just something that you had mentioned in your response, right? It's like the focus isn't the elections. The elections are just one part. It's just one tool as part of the strategy, right? I mean, elections mm-hmm. and ultimately elected officials are part of our plan to have our agenda realized, right? Because for a Green New Deal, for affordable housing, for Medicare for all, ultimately the targets for these kinds of issues are people that are in office. So if we're gonna win these things, we have to strategize about them and think about, you know, on the ground, how do we agitate? How do we build public awareness? How do we build our base? And then also, how do we get champions in office who are going to take those issues that we generate and they're going to fight for them? So I think this movement, because it's been organizing around issues for a long time, is already very clear about that, yep. that ultimately the vision is bigger than just putting people in office. But we've become clearer that we have to be really strategic and analyze, like, what are the key places in local office that we have to get some wins in? So that's what happened with Larry, right?
Right.
In a city that's the most incarcerated in the country, one of the best ways to try to circumvent that is to get the top prosecutor to be someone who sued the Philadelphia Police Department 75 times.
Exactly, right? Yeah, like I mean, like, you know, I was thinking about this, right? You know, this is one of these moments. Like, I remember, like, United Students Against Sweatshops, right? It's like the story, if mm-hmm. you look at the story of the United Students Against Sweatshops and social movements, is that they ask themselves the same kind of question, right? It's like, okay, how can you organize on a university campus and have a disproportionate impact on the structure of the system as a whole that you're working against? Well, you work through, you know, the less sexy role of, like, you know, the licensing agreements that schools make, right, with clothing manufacturers, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. because if you do that, if you require the schools in order to have, you know, like monitoring of factories to say that they're not using child labor, they're not kind of like having forced sterilization of women, right, in order to work on that, that you have some degree of kind of like equitable and kind of labor rights like on the shop floor that's going to be monitored. Well, guess what? Suddenly now that university has a disproportionate impact because of their buying power. And it's the same kind of principle. Mm-hmm. When hearing people talk about Larry Krasner and why you're going to get behind Larry Krasner and why Larry Krasner ran, right, is for mm-hmm. exactly what you just said, right? It's such an important lesson for social movements about choosing kind of the sites of maximum impact, right, in order mm-hmm. to have a shift, in order to build power with wins, right? It's mm-hmm. really extraordinary.
Yeah, no, it is. And the thing is, like, once you realize it's a place for struggle and an opportunity to win something, these fights are hard, but also we're going against a system that honestly is atrophying and kind of cannibalizing itself.
Yeah.
So I mean, for a lot of this work, you know, it's organized. We apply organizing principles to run an electoral campaign.
Yep. You still there? I think you just cut out. Can you still hear me, Rick? Let's see if we can get Rick back in a second. While we see if he kind of comes back on. Oop. Oh, there you go.
Hello.
Yeah, you gotcha.
Sorry, I think what happened was there was an incoming call and somehow it might have
Oh, muted you out. Yeah.
Yeah.
you were just talking about applying organizing strategies to kind of running political campaigns or running for office.
I see. Yeah. So, in applying organizing principles, you know, one-on-one conversations, understanding mutual interest, you know, sharing personal connection to the things that we're talking about and fighting for, you start to realize that kind of rhetoric is really effective for inspiring people around political office. And once you do that, I mean, the results are extraordinary. I mean, again, Kendra winning in city council was historic.
It was unbelievable. That was like
historic.
Yes, absolutely.
I took out, you know, I came up against a 35-year incumbent, a man who's been in office longer than I've been alive.
Yep.
My dear friend Nikhil Saval just ran a race for a Senate district that's the size of half of Philadelphia.
Yep.
As an open socialist, and he won.
Yep.
So these are, you know, when you actually just drill down and just do the work of having real conversations with people, and not being afraid to push for more. I mean, you'd be surprised at the results.
Well, and I also think that it kind of turns upright the way that time should work, I think, you know, here. Because a lot of time, you kind of mentioned this, alluded to this before, about, you know, a lot of people get all their attention focused on elections, right? And saying that the elections and the mobilization for the election is the prime work, right? Whereas, you know, I've always felt this, you know, this is one of my hobby horses for years, and say, no, look, if as a student of the labor movement, right, someone who came up through kind of the labor movement, someone who kind of like, you know, cut my teeth in labor organizing and punk rock music, those are always, you know, the two key mm-hmm. pillars. But mm-hmm. it was that the idea that what you learn pretty quickly is that if you run on the timeline of the establishment, you're always going to be a step behind, right? Mm. So what you got to do is flip it around, where the organizing that takes place in communities is the primary time, right? That's mm-hmm. where you spend the bulk of the time. The election is just a moment on the calendar, which, yes, has to mm-hmm. be integrated in the overall strategy. But the overall mm-hmm. strategy is with the people in the streets and in the communities. That's the source of power. And that's what when labor was most radical in the 1930s, 1920s, 1930s, that's the kind of stuff that they did. Right.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the populist movement, same kind of stuff. You look at the civil rights movement, same kind of stuff. Elections were moments that they incorporated into their calendars, and they didn't kind of build their calendars around elections. And that's what I see mm-hmm. is kind of has fundamentally started to flip, right, in Philly and other places around the country.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. You're seeing that kind of encompassing strategy happening. And I think on top of that, it's being aided by a whole politicization of an age group.
Yes.
I mean, young millennials and, you know, Gen Zers, you know, a group I identify with, you know, we are dealing with the drastic effects of late stage capitalism, you know.
Absolutely.
Saddling student debt, an environment that is hurtling towards increasing disaster. A, you know, economic inequality that just becomes deeper and deeper every day. And now we're in the middle of a health pandemic. Before all of that, you know, that was before we entered a health pandemic and a crisis moment around police brutality. So,
you take a step back on this one. I mean, like, yeah. Holy shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, really. Yeah. I mean, if it could not, if the crisis could be not more acute, I don't know how else everything couldn't get worse. I'm always reminded of that. But really, just at that moment, holy crap. I mean, this is where we're at.
And also, you know, this crisis, while being a separate thing, is in fact connected to many of the issues that we just mentioned, right?
Exactly.
Had we lived in a society where healthcare was a human right, where it was something that was safeguarded and provided instead of, you know, protected. If we had a place where housing was guaranteed, if we had a place where economic security was guaranteed for people.
And if we actually had an organizing policy that did not allow somebody like Donald Trump to even freaking exist, right? Yeah. I mean, that kind of like the wealth disparity, right, that has helped lead the charge on all those other issues that you just pointed to, right? That mm-hmm. we've made a choice to kind of like, hey, we're going to give these folks all the rain in the world while everyone else, all of us, are paying the price. So didn't mean to interrupt, but this is exactly it.
Not at all. No, you're 100% right. It's like, and again, you know, Trump's election is the culmination of a 50-year strategy. Yes. by Republicans, you know.
Well, let me give a shout out to folks here too as well. If there's anybody, you do have something that you want to say, you got a comment, you want to go to call in, you got a question for Rick, or just something you want to join the conversation, you can hit that little call button at the bottom of your app and call in. We'd love to hear from you. So let me ask you about this. It's like, so not only do we have a situation where you're going to be, you know, headed to Harrisburg in the very near future, an amazing movement. A politicized constituency in Philadelphia, including people like yourself, can be elected officials, right? But it's not limited to Philadelphia. And this is one of the things that's absolutely incredible to me. If you look at what is happening, even in the center of the state, is that, as you've mentioned before, you've got a whole generation, kind of younger folks who come up have been politicized, that you've got candidates that may be actually flipping red districts, right, in the middle of the state. So, I don't want to lean too heavily on Bernie Sanders here, right? But just thinking about more as a political marker rather than kind of like, you know, does somebody have an allegiance to Sanders? Not like that. But, you know, it gives us a sense of it. So Sanders came out and he put the full list of endorsements out, right? I mean, of course, you were endorsed earlier on. But then you also, this list includes Sarah Imerato, Summer Lee, John Podora, Nicole Miller, who's also in the center of the state, Tara Shakespeare, also in the center of the state, Tara Zirinsky, who actually you hooked me up with, and she's going to be on the show next week, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Elizabeth Fiedler, yourself, Nikhil Saval, Amanda Cappelletti, and Shana Danielson, right? It's like, so you've got a, I mean, of that list, I was going through that list last night. Of that list, you have
squad.
I mean, this is even more, we're getting beyond a squad at this point, right?
It's true.
I mean, and those are, that list of people there are not long shots. These are folks, every single one of the people I just mentioned is like very, if not going to win, very close and in a competitive race and looks like they have the shot to win. So you could be heading to Harrisburg with a fundamentally different kind of legislature there, right? Yeah. Have you given that kind of thought, or even have you been, you know, kind of talking to some of these folks about strategy ahead of time moving forward?
Oh yeah, no, most certainly. Believe me, I'm thinking about it a lot. It would be a game changer.
Yeah.
Because right now, I mean, we all know Harrisburg is just, it's a mess.
Yeah.
It is a place where good legislation goes to die often.
Yep.
Because we have a Republican held legislature where they are just hell bent on stopping any kind of forward progress, on not even recognizing this crisis for what it is and putting in the appropriate measures. And so if we were to flip the House, we have a decent shot of flipping the Senate as well. I mean, even one of those chambers would be amazing for us, because she was having dinner with Nikhil last night, and we were talking about this. What this can mean is our bills, our narrative, our vision will have more space, you know. And I think that's something that we have to think about when it comes to local office and when it comes to issues. The first step is always creating the narrative and creating the space for the awareness and the political capital to be built around our issues. You had mentioned, you know, even just talking about Raging Chicken, right?
Yep.
The need to create press and media that is rooted in our values, so that you start to enter the public consciousness. So if we were to get Democratic control of one of those houses, we would just have so much more opportunity to actually have our vision receiving a voice, you know? So I think that that's one way in which we have immediate returns if we were to take over one of those chambers, or if both would be great. And then also, I mean, like you said, it's not even a squad anymore. Now it's like a team.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly. You got a bench now, even.
It's like a battalion, a progressive battalion.
Exactly.
So
freaking paratroopers going on here.
So if we were to have a progressive battalion, then we can start actually talking about like real strategy. I think it's about, you know, we can start to think about like, okay, you know, what are the key committees that we need to have a presence on?
Right.
What kind of legislation do we want to introduce this session? What do we foresee as the challenges? What's going to be the opposition? How do we build the bench? How do we, as you know, a collective of progressive, you know, electeds that are aligned, how do we get more allies in our offices? What did we do? And then how do we think about all these elections moving forward? I mean, 2022 is going to be a very significant year for Pennsylvania.
Huge.
You have the governor's race. You have the Senate elections. You have Toomey, who just stepped down. He's not running for re-election. So, you know, I think there's a real opportunity for progressives to use this moment to, like, win and really shake things up and then just keep the ball and just run with it, man.
Well, I can't tell you how good that is to hear. Is like, you know, one of the things that I've was been one of my hobby horses over the years is the ways that you look at, in my view, right, my humble opinion, the biggest neglected area in the state right now is the Lehigh Valley. Right, the Lehigh Valley is one of the fastest growing areas within the state of Pennsylvania. It has a kind of a rapidly growing, say immigrant population. Right. The work that they are doing on the ground there, kind of defend immigrant rights, is just absolutely outstanding. You have Make the Road PA that is kind of has really built a culture around that. You have PA Stands Up, the Lehigh Valley. They're there. You got a DSA chapter that is there. You got great labor organizing that's going on there. And just I used to live in Allentown and spent some time there and know a little bit about the way that, say, the politics of movements and stuff works around there, is that what the only thing that is lacking, right? The only thing that's been lacking has been the strength and of organizing, right? And that is starting to happen. And I look at if that becomes yet another, I mean, we already see this going on, right? We already see this. You know, Tara Zirinsky is a perfect example of this, but we see some major changes, like in Bethlehem City Council. The DSA was successful in having got a series of measures passed in the council. They are organizing on the ground there. There's been some really good labor kind of outreach there. And I use that just as an example to say, you know, when I look to you guys, right? When I look to this new class kind of coming forward, the battalion, I love it, the progressive battalion, is that looking for kind of giving that the win that people like Summer Lee, for example, gave to a lot of people on the ground that would show up for those movements and say, no, you guys are doing the right thing and we need you. Right. Because, you know, on the one hand, what you're going to be able to do in the state house is going to be, I think, is going to be outstanding in the ways that you said. And also the ways that just your presence in particular places can mean to movements on the ground in places like the Lehigh Valley, even places like Scranton and Erie, for example, can be absolutely astounding. Places that have been neglected by the Democratic establishment up until now.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also places where they are a mixture of urban and rural, like ideas, you know? Because I think those are actually some of the places where I think as you're saying, there's starting to be some emerging nascent movement and organizing happening there. And I think it's because the left and progressives have also become clear that we can't just do Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and exactly. hope for the best.
Exactly.
That's also just not the kind of movement we want, right? If we actually truly want a multiracial working class movement that unites all marginalized people, that goes far beyond
exactly.
just Philly and Pittsburgh. And that includes rural working class people. It includes immigrants. It includes, you know, farmers, workers, bus drivers, everyone. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic about a lot of those movements too, because I think they also lay out the groundwork for further implementation of real, like, rural organizing, you know. I mean, like, Lancaster Stands Up, I think,
exactly.
is a shining example
exactly.
of that kind of stuff. And we just need LSUs, like, throughout Pennsylvania.
Well, and I'll tell you right now, this is something that I've said, like, again, over the years, 1,001 times, is that in my view, ever since I moved to Pennsylvania, right? Because I'm really, like I said, originally from upstate New York. I lived in D.C. I lived in Ohio, kind of moved around a bit. But ever since I moved to Pennsylvania, one of the things that I've always said to people would say to me, the area is really conservative. This area is really conservative, and this is not going to happen. And the thing that I always said in my mind is, like, no. Pennsylvania has got, like, a suppressed gene right now, and that suppressed gene is radicalism. Let's recall the miners' strike. Let's recall the textile organizations, the textile organizing that took place in this state. Let's talk about, you know, what happened up in Jim Thorpe, where you have the mining, like the radical miners organizing up there. Like the labor movement and the kind of radical organizing in this state has been read. I recently found out, and I didn't know this fact before, that Pennsylvania has voted for, like, you know, the winner in a presidential election, like, in all years, but like two or something like that. And the one time that they voted otherwise, when they voted for the populist candidate, right? That united urban and rural and working class people with a populist kind of radical agenda. And I swear to God, this is the state where that message and bringing that together as a movement is it's right below the surface. It's like you could almost taste it. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's really there. And I think it's because Pennsylvania is, on the whole, a state that encompasses so many different demographics. I mean, you have rural. You have rural, you have urban, you have everything in between. You have immigrants, you have, you know, Black folks who've migrated here from the South during the Great Migration. You have working class white communities. You have generations of immigrant communities here. You have burgeoning, you have progressives, you have socialists, you have all these different kinds of people that I think really is why PA is such a battleground state. Yep. But I also think those battlegrounds are the places for the most opportunity. They're the places where we can actually think about how we create a populist progressive message that unites people that have been often told to be adversarial to one another.
Exactly. And I, you know, my, you know, again, the thing that I would always say to folks too, as well, is that, you know, the one thing that unites this is part of that kind of, you know, that suppressed gene, so to speak, right? Is that the same structure, the same system that is watching people in rural Pennsylvania, like having their water supplies destroyed by the oil and gas industry, is the same system that is privatizing public schools and incarcerating kind of generations of youth in the cities. Right. It's the same structure. And really what is before us is that just kind of what you're doing, right? The organizing work to bring these folks together and to build that kind of movement.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, hey, man, I know your time is up and I really appreciate the time. You know, I know this is crunch time, that you've been out there working for candidates and out there kind of making sure that making plans for next month. So, you know, I'm just going to. You know, you're not up against Republican opposition this year, which is awesome. But I'm not going to jinx the kind of like last minute thing too. So I'm going to say good luck anyways, right? I hope to see like you know, an overwhelming flood of support that's going to come in on kind of election day when people are already in the process of voting. Good luck on kind of making sure that the polls are open and that people are not going to have their rights stripped away on election day. And I look forward to all the work you got going forward, man. And I, you know, welcome back to this space anytime. Any way I can do to help amplify what's going on in the State House, what's going on in Philly, what's going on in kind of the work that you're doing. So I appreciate it, man.
Hey, thank you. Hey, no, Kevin, I really appreciate it. Thank you for giving me space to talk. I really appreciated the conversation. And I look forward to being able to do some great work in the future.
All right. Awesome. Well, hey, have a good one, Rick. Have a good day and have a great week and onwards moving forward. I'm going to do a little outro here, everybody. Sorry. And after the outro, I'll stick around and have some little closing thoughts for everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Oh,
Hey, everybody, just sticking around here for Out the Coop Live once again. I hope you enjoyed the show. Talk with Rick Kujewski today. And, you know, I got to say, I've talked to Rick a few times, and every single time I talk to him, it gets me more encouraged about the direction that we're moving as a state. And, you know, just a generation of progressive left leadership and organizers that, I don't know, man, it just, let me just put it as here's how corny I'm going to get, just makes my heart feel good. you know, as someone who's, you know, like I'm a Gen Xer, right? And our, you know, I hate these broad generalizations when it comes to generations, but I'm going to do it anyways. You know, for those of us who grew up in like the Reagan era, the end of the Cold War, the rise of neoliberalism, in between two massive generations, right? The baby boomers and millennials, it very often felt like, you know, we were, kind of yelling into the darkness. You know what I mean? It was, we protested, we organized, and it always felt so, I mean, God, almost utopian in the sense that the structures just seemed so big. It was so easy to fall into despair, but, we kept on, you know, and I, you know, I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine, and, we were talking about the dramatic changes, right, that are taking place in so many ways in our culture, right? And so some of them positive, some of them not so good, right? And, you know, what I was saying to him is like, you know, look, people like us, right? You know, this is another kind of like another kind of white guy kind of in the same kind of generation as me, is that people like us, you know, who we've got to see ourselves as a certain kind of bridge. Right. And I mean that through the dark days of the Reagan administration, through the dark days of the Cold War and the rise of neoliberalism, when every place you turned, every conversation you had, people would just kind of like shove, there's nothing you can do, there is no alternative, back in your face. And look, and I don't want to minimize the dark time that we're in now, right, under Donald Trump. But you got to understand, that was a long period of darkness, if you want to use that phrase. But we had hope. And there were always mentors. There were always people that were teaching us how to organize. There were always those folks that were keeping it on, right? And they were always multiracial, multi-classed, right? They were always multi-gendered. They always were attentive to kind of, you know, sexual diversity, right? I mean, and, but it also felt very clicky, like you grouped together with each other, right? Because you felt like you were kind of like you needed to constantly provide yourself with some support, right? Those voices that stood around you to remind you that no, you weren't crazy, that fighting this fight is worth it. I stand here now and seeing the work of people like Rick Kujewski, seeing the work of Nikhil Saval, Summer Lee, Sarah N. Morato, Elizabeth Fiedler, right? You've heard me talk on the regular podcast about, you know, Shayna Danielson, who I just think is running just an absolutely amazing campaign. With someone who ran before, came very, very close when she was told she didn't have a shot. And what did she do? Did she walk away? No, she got back in there. And now she's like just running this amazing campaign. And I look to those folks, and not in the sense of like, oh, now, you know, thank goodness somebody else is doing the work. Not like that, but it's given me hope. Right. And I recognize that, you know, I'm in a little of a different role now than I was when I was 20, when I was 30 years old. And one of these things about this space and Raging Chicken is one of the things that Rick was kind of referring to there for a bit, was that, you know, I want to be here to help amplify these voices and help cover these folks. Because look, it's not going to be an easy road ahead. And we need to build out our kind of media infrastructures. We need to build out our organizing structures. We need to really build a movement in every direction. And you know, is like, I constantly have the conversation with myself, right? Because I really don't have a lot of people to talk to about this. But about, okay, how can I be most effective given the realities of my life, right? You know, I'm getting older, so I don't have the energy that I used to. I have two young kids, right, who are struggling with schooling in the pandemic, not to mention just, you know, the limits on where we can go and what we can do and, you know, which one of their friends they can see and things like this. I mean, I can't even tell you the strain that puts on me, that puts on our family, that puts on parents all over the place. And this is one of these places, Raging Chicken, right? This podcast is one of the places where, you know, I think I can contribute. I got something to give, right? So that's where I'm going to keep the hope alive. So, you know, if you're listening to live, you're hearing this live on here, but the whole show, including the kind of, you know, this post-show little talk, that will be kind of a patrons-only kind of feature. And I really want to thank all of you, our patrons on Patreon. You know, we've had some folks too as well who have been with us since the beginning, since 2011, who are not, don't show up on our Patreon account because they actually joined before we had a Patreon. I think before Patreon existed, actually. And they've been still members from the very beginning, right? And so for everybody who's like helped make this possible, thank you. And, you know, let me kind of give you a task too as well, is like, you know, share this podcast, share the Patreon, encourage your friends and others to help support this podcast and why it's important. Right. And, you know, we've got 2 weeks left, you know, just over 2 weeks left. So it's pretty good. So I just want to remind you one thing. So, you can check out kind of in the weeks ahead. Next week, we're going to have Tara Zirinsky, who's running in Northampton County. That's in the Lehigh Valley area, with kind of parts of Bethlehem and North. She'll be on the show, and we'll talk a little bit her about her campaign. And she is in a race that some folks didn't, you know, Democrats never even put in the time, right, because they didn't think it was winnable. And she looks like she just may pull this off. Awesome, awesome candidate. She's been... you know, she's out there, was it Bethlehem Council, City Council or something like that, or Northampton. And she's a great, fantastic progressive candidate. Is another one who's been endorsed by Bernie Sanders. And then the following week is going to be the Monday before Election Day. And we're going to do a little special roundtable discussion where, yes, we'll talk a little bit about the election, what our thoughts are on the elections and that kind of stuff. But more in particular, similar to kind of the conversation we had today with Rick, is about looking forward, right? What's kind of the organizing that people see that's necessary going forward. So anyways, I'm going to cut it off in there. Thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate the time. I appreciate your support. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll see you on Friday for our regular Out the Coop with Sean Kitchen. And we'll see you next week for Out the Coop Live with Tara Zirinsky. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thanks to all of you. See ya!